You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
So we were just talking about, like, what are we going to say on the podcast? Who did something? And then Dan gave us a hot tip or a new breaking news.
Yeah. Breaking news. I am the breaking news guy, the office.
But it's usually like Russian conspiracies.
It's always like hunting adjacent, but not really. It's always like moose antlers. Speaking of moose antlers, I was just reading about a guy that beat a pedophile to death with a moose antler.
Like, that's not the example of your ridiculousness. That actually happened.
That actually happened.
Did you read the whole story?
So it was this guy that went to jail for assaulting a kid a while ago. He's in this neighborhood. Everyone kind of knew him as a Herbert the Pervert.
On the list.
And he was
Jesse.
Like just parking outside of schools and stuff. And this dad felt like he was following his daughter, or there's some sort of like he was always around his daughter. And he just went over there and beat him to death. With moose antler, apparently with something else, and then finished him off with a moose antler.
Did he have the moose antler with him?
It sounds like it was at the pedophile's place. So
just strapped to his hip, walks around with a moose antler.
Yeah, and then he just walked over to the police station, like covered in blood, and turned himself in. And was like, hey, just beat the pedophile to death. So yeah, moose antlers. Good defense weapon.
So that had to have taken place in Maine or something, where they have meese?
I can't remember where it was.
It was somewhere north.
There's probably somewhere north.
A lot of places.
It might have been Canada.
I wonder if it was Alex.
I'll share the story in Slack. It's good hunting related.
Good. You have to share it on Go Wild, too, now. And just say, hey, a couple episodes from now, this is coming. Discussion of the moose.
I will save the link, and then when this podcast goes live, I'll comment
on
the podcast.
We could break out into a discussion of if a moose antler shed is really the best weapon versus like a whitetail or an elk, but I think maybe we'll save that for another day.
Well,
or how many uses are there for a moose antler?
Yeah.
Moose, those antlers are like defensive, like to protect you from getting butted, right? Like they're not clobbering each other with the antlers. They're shields.
Yeah, they totally. I mean, just like anything else.
I thought it was like deer are trying to antler you, like moose are just like using.
No,
like a
dude,
shield.
They're very aggressive.
Well, I know that, but I thought they were mostly like.
Yeah, they use their legs a lot for
leg
sure,
action.
No, I think that's also
when they charge though, it's head down. Like.
Because they're, like, so flat.
You got two giant boat paddles coming
huge.
At you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're, like, 40 pounds when they're big.
So now when you're wielding a 40-pound moose antler and beating someone with it, you're a strong man.
I need to know, is it a juvenile or an adult?
Yeah, that's a good point.
If someone had it in their house, I bet it was pretty big. I bet it was, like, a trophy size.
You meant the moose, not the child.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Okay. This is. I just all didn't right. know which. I just.
No one's wrong. Wielding children around
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
Well, someone was. And then he got man. Beaten by a moose antler.
Well, anyways, you guys went fishing?
We did. Yes.
Well, stick to the shed story.
I think that's where this started.
Another transition.
Are you trying to be like Erica with the mic right now? It's like sticking. Erica always puts the mic 6 inches from her face. It's two fingers whispers. Is the rule. Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. All right. So you went shed hunting?
Yeah. Me and Phil, we went out to a spot that we hunt a lot, and we have some great bucks on camera out there, and definitely we're trying to find those really big sheds from those really big bucks, but. In doing that, spoiler alert, we didn't find a shed. But in doing that, we kind of were like, man, where do you start looking for sheds for these giant bucks? And we started like going back through all of our camera pictures, and like all the pictures of big bucks are coming from this one specific area that like during hunting season, we haven't wanted to go in and like mess up. Like you don't want to like just follow a buck trail and like go looking for a buck or whatever in the spot you're going to be hunting. And so we're like, man, let's just go that way and start seeing what we can see. And we walked miles, just like following trails and piecing everything together and dropping Onyx pins and getting everything lined out, and really kind of had a better understanding of why I ended up shooting my buck this year, why he came from where he came from, why Phil shot his buck the previous year, like just of how the whole landscape is working. And on top of that, there's all these logging roads now back there that weren't there in the past. And so we kind of had to relearn the area and figure that all out. And we've got a really, really good setup out there for early season. Early season south wind, that's going to be our spot, and we feel really good about it. So that was fun.
I did hear that you're just not a Dan Johnson when it comes to shed hunting, though.
Well, I mean, I did what he said.
What does that mean?
I put my head down and I walked miles.
Dan was talking about how he used to shed hunt last episode, and he was a successful shed hunter. He said not one of these guys. I mean, he used to find a lot of sheds. Uh-huh. But he's like, it's not hard. You go to where the deer live.
So, well, and walk a lot.
Yeah,
we didn't get to walk like as much as we wanted to, but
it was really funny on social media. The National Deer Alliance, Lindsey Thomas, posted the stuff Lindsey drops is just amazing. He's so smart, but he was dropping a video about shed hunting and how there was this. They have these research facilities. This one was 480 acres, and they were observing whitetail in Georgia, I think, and or Alabama, I can't remember, somewhere down south. And they were talking about how they sent out these grad students, and they would look for antlers from these deer, and they were only finding 40% of the drops from the deer that they knew they had on site. And all these rednecks are commenting, and they're like, well, that's what they get for sending college students in. they should send in rednecks. And I'm like, are you guys just openly admitting that you don't think rednecks can be smart and go to colleges? Like, they didn't realize what they were saying. And then Lindsey was commenting. He's like, well, how do you know that they aren't rednecks? Like, well, just because they went to college doesn't mean that. Obviously, if you're majoring in something related to whitetail biology, you like to hunt. These are really smart people. Like, yeah. I don't think these Bubbas that were commenting are going to come in and do any better shed hunting than the guys that are literally researching the deer. Also, 480 acres with grad students, they could probably cover all that, like, through a class. Like, they could, you could get through it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's hard, too. Like, when they shed their antlers, it's not like they just go, boop, and fall on a trail. Like, they go like this.
Right.
And shake their head, and then they go, woof, woof.
A lot of what Lindsey was saying is that people are always looking for the big ones. And he's like, that's the easy part. It's when you can find the little ones. You know, we have some of these sitting on our table here. It's like, those are the ones that are really hard to find because they get covered by leaves. They fall into rock cracks and, you know, all these really difficult places to find. And he's like, everybody takes pride in finding the big one because you want to have your deer that you're hunting their drops. But he's like, that's not the hard part.
Yeah.
It's finding the little ones.
Well, yeah, not to mention critters grabbing them.
Yeah.
Yodies want them. Yeah. Squirrels want them. Like, everything's grabbing those.
My dog loves them around. He loves to chew on antlers, and I'd be curious to see how many are just stacked up in a coyote hole somewhere.
Oh, man, yeah.
Ernie won't touch them.
Really?
Mm-mm. Wants nothing to do with them. I've tried.
Yeah, so. Dogsy loves them.
Well, there you go. So now can we talk about fishing? Because I'm really curious. And let's just all say that Dan bailed.
He did, man. Bail. Something about cold. Shower and
it's supposed no, to be that's cold a different rainy. Story. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Working on a shower.
Oh, I thought you meant Dan taking a shower for a minute.
Yeah. No, it's just I got a big honey-do list, so there's only so many weekends I can be like, can I be gone all weekend?
Well, unless it's 80 degrees too, Dan doesn't like to go outside.
This is true.
That was the heavy factor. The weather was discussed a lot.
Yeah. It was forecasted to be raining. You guys were going Sunday. It was supposed to rain Saturday through Saturday night into Sunday. And then they were saying it was going to be like 38 degrees in the morning on Sunday. Plus, it was daylight saving. So we were losing an hour. So we were already going to be tired. And this creek is, what, an hour and a half away?
You should have left that part out, bud.
What?
I was on 2 hours of sleep.
Well, that's not healthy. That's not a good
it's
thing.
Not about health.
Oh, you're about health now?
You just got so squishy.
Cigarettes.
I'm drinking
aren't
this
healthy.
Wildlands coffee.
Mr. Arby's. Oh, yeah. That's right. How's the. So, this is this podcast brought to you by Wildland Coffee. Our buddy Zach sent us some. Yeah, Dan's just rolling. Are you rolling with it? You just got the whole bag in there?
No.
Oh, you took it out.
Took it out.
Zach from Wildland Coffee sent us some coffee to try on each show here, and we brought Dan in. Dan's never had the coffee. So, Dan, with I just identified that you have a garbage palate, but what do you think?
I do have a garbage palate. I'm not a huge coffee drinker, although I was drinking my Keurig K-Cup this morning. It's good. The weird thing about me with coffee is I don't like hot drinks.
Oh, yeah. You let your coffee get cold, right?
Yeah, so if coffee's been sitting out for 4 hours, that's my jam.
Well, I'm glad we gave you the dumpster palate.
Yeah, I'm glad we gave you the nice Wildland mug.
Yes.
Actually, these are so nice that I just had to scold Chris because Zach sent us two. And Chris just took it home. I was like, dude, that wasn't...
He is the king of
that's kind of on you. That's kind of on you, though.
You think because I didn't... Yeah, no, we literally told him. We told him. I said, Chris, because Chris will put anything through the dishwasher, and these are really nice with the cork bottom. I said, Chris, please don't put this in the dishwasher. And Chris took that to mean that we didn't want to wash it, so he should take it home where it'll get washed, hand washed. And so
there's not a sink.
If there's ever free stickers, free hats, or anything that comes in from a trade show, it's gone within seconds because if Chris Klein comes through.
Yeah. Most of the time I just give it to him, so save
I know. I've started just going ahead and proactively giving stuff to Chris too. So
but yeah, so about the coffee, you know, I'm doing Keurig K-Cups, and this A, tastes better, but B, it's got all the convenience of the K-Cup because it's self-contained. You just make it once and throw it away, but I don't have to make it at home with my big machine. I could just bring some packets to the office.
Well, and on like fishing trip too, what's cool is you could take like a hot boiling water, put it in the Yeti, take it with you guys, and then you can have a fresh cup there instead of it sitting and continuing to, you know, cook.
So plastic K-Cups?
Mm-hmm.
There's no plastic in these things.
That is cool.
I think, like, if you're comparing the packability, ease of use, keep that plastic out of the environment.
That's true. It does have this thingy, though.
Yeah, there's some packaging.
Yeah. I mean, it's not...
Not bad.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to do, like, you shouldn't be drinking...
Through plastic.
Like I think even the guy...
Like the hot water even, in the plastic.
No, the even the guy that invented K-Cups said he regretted it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because they're so bad. Like, you can't... Unless you completely take off all the foil and dump out the coffee and then separately recycle them, they're not recyclable.
And then you're like, all right, K-Cup guy, we'll donate all the money you made off you. Yeah. Well, I don't regret it that much.
Not that much. Let's not be irrational.
I don't regret it that much.
All right, before we move on, I'll just say, if you want to check out Zach's coffee, it's wildlandcoffee.co. The dude's got a... he sells them in batches, like you can buy a whole box. Today we're drinking the medium roast, so which is approved.
It's tasty.
It's very
tasty. I will
say
I let this one steep longer than last time.
Helped out.
I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's what Zach says to do. Yeah. The new ones he's working on are for people that don't feel like they're strong enough. He's trying to come up with a better batch. So
well, the other thing, since it's a tea bag, you can let it keep going until the flavor's right.
That's right.
And then take
once you get used to like once you know. Sounds like Jacob's a 10-11 minute guy, you just leave it in there that long. So
yeah, he should make one for non-coffee snobs like me that have sugar and non-dairy creamer in the bag as well.
Put a little flavor, you know, some nutmeg.
I might just put that bag in my cheek.
But yeah, that's the next product. It's just it's like a Wildland Grinds. Yeah,
but anyway, so fishing, I only get so many weekends a year to go turkey hunting, go deer hunting. So I'd try to be judicial in when I use it. And the weather was supposed to be bad. And this is all bank fishing. And it's not super well maintained. And I was just envisioning like muddy banks.
Have you not heard him say this part yet?
What?
No.
Welcome.
You said it's not well maintained.
You're saying that has the best bank access.
Part of his reason for not going was getting all slippy on the bank. Brayden did almost take a bath at one point.
So why are you acting like I'm talking crazy? Because
it's not super well maintained. That is very crazy. He
it's
survived
insanely
it. He
well
might
maintained.
Have got a little bit wet in one spot.
Agree to disagree.
What do we buy all this gear for if we don't want to use it?
Yeah. What do you mean?
You got all this warm like stuff to keep you warm.
Well,
and it gets a little chilly and you're like, I want to fish in a t-shirt and shorts.
I will, if it was waiting... I would do that because I went wading out.
It is not a wading experience.
You know, end of December in North Carolina, and it was 34 degrees and, you know, snow all over the banks, and that's okay. But it just didn't seem like the weather was going to be good for.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it was cold.
But it was better than I thought it was going to be. I thought you guys were going to be getting dumped on.
Well, we got less rain than was projected.
Yeah.
The water looked good. I mean, there was a little bit of mud at the top where there's a feeder creek that comes in. But honestly, the water was pretty perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you said you got one on a woolly bugger that you were streaming, so they must have been active. It must have been a good water temperature.
Yeah, I would say we had that warm week a couple weeks ago. If you had fished like 3 days into that, it probably would have been exceptional.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the temperature dropped last week, got a little colder. We did have cloud cover, which was good. That helped a lot. But from at least one of the fish I caught, it was scarred up enough that looked like it had worked itself up from the main river. And so we've continued to go back every year from a couple years ago when Braden and I had an exceptional day. He caught two really big fish coming up out of the main river. And so we've continued to go back to try to like replicate that. And I think if we had been there a couple weeks ago and it was warmer.
How was the pressure? Was there a bunch of other people fishing?
Well, there was what? 5 of us together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Who all went?
Braden, myself, 2 of his buddies.
Tucker and Shane.
Yeah, Tucker and Shane. And then Steven.
Steven Davis.
From Go Wild, that Braden had talked to Go Wild and figured out he was fly fishing in Kentucky.
I just commented like, hey, see you're fly fishing in Kentucky. Cool. You know, I think platform we're going soon. Yeah, I was like, we're going soon. And he was like, yeah, like, where are you going? Like, and I was like, let's DM about this. And he was like, yeah, I'll be there. I was like, fantastic.
Nice. Yep.
I'm guessing he'd been there before.
No. So he's been fly fishing for 4 weeks. And he's just getting into it. And so, like, getting to hang out with a guy like Jacob and, like, asking him a bunch of questions and learning.
And a guy like you.
Not a guy like
me.
Well,
to be fair,
I learned everything I know from Jacob.
I don't want to – let's not set the expectation that I was guiding Steven and helping him a ton.
You're just yelling at him, get the net! Get the net!
It did happen one time.
It did. But he was intentional, though. He was, like, trying to learn. So he was asking a lot of, like, really cool questions. Yeah. Like, it was fun.
There was one point he got hung up, and I was explaining, like, how you – try to get it free based on the current and stuff. And so, yeah, it was good. And you know me, I love to share flies. So I'm out there handing out my little drug baggies of flies.
He literally
flies.
Did. We pulled up in the parking lot and he had like little baggies for everyone, like mom's lunch. Like, there you go, boys.
Here's your orange slices.
Did you guys see Zach Kukurevich?
He didn't make it. He didn't make it.
He said he was busy. He was trying to shed hunt and do some stuff out at the farm.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Steven and Kukurevich are friends.
Oh,
yeah. They hung out. He actually shot his first deer at Rickerich's farm like you.
Just like me.
He did a crossbow, though.
Oh. How many shots did it take him?
not
I didn't ask
what talking about.
Well, I wish I knew that episode number that we could point people to. Cause that's,
it's called Musket Loader.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the first uncensored episodes because I think – it has to be one of the first, like one of the first 15 or so, because it was that deer season when I got toothpicks. So it was right after that, maybe.
It's probably a December date because it was muzzleloader season.
Yeah.
Musket loader.
Ye old musket loader,
that's
I think it's called.
Yeah, that is it. Yeah.
Why has that not been put on a t-shirt yet?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, next sticker.
The fishing, though, I was talking to my dad last night, and I was like, you know, I caught a couple good fish, but overall it was slow. Like the fishing was pretty slow. I don't know if they were just down deep, not eating a bunch. We caught a couple at the very top, like typical.
And the water was pretty clear?
Yeah, it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't touch the water to feel it because it's pretty consistent down there. But
just for, you know, some people that listen to the show may not fish, like you guys have said like target species and stuff, kind of talk through what you were doing and where, like as much as you can. I know you don't want to say where, but you know,
don't care about where.
Well, if you don't care about where, like just give some you know, we're hitting high level of some stuff, just get a little deeper.
Yeah, so this is below the Lake Cumberland Dam, Wolf Creek Dam. It is called Hatchery Creek
in Kentucky.
Yep. And so we are after rainbow trout. I've caught one small brown trout out of there. I've caught a cutthroat. They've randomly stocked some cutthroat in there. And then there are brook trout in there as well. You're primarily catching stocker size rainbow trout most of the time. Pretty cool creek. I think we've talked about it on other episodes, but there's the dam and then the water comes through the hatchery, the national fish hatchery that's there. And then comes out of that. And what they did is they cut a meandering creek that weaves back and forth, has a bunch of different types of structure, looks very Western in certain parts of it. At the bottom of it, before it hits the main river, there's these plunge pools that are, you know, 15, 20 feet long or so. And so it's really cool. You get a lot of different types of fishing. So at the top of the creek, there's sidewalks on both sides of it. A lot of people go there. It's put and take. They stock fish into it every other day. So there's a lot of people that just come and utilize it. I highly encourage, if you are in Kentucky and you've never caught, cooked your own trout, this is the place to go try it out. Because there's a lot of fish. And so, or if you want to try out fly fishing, that's a great spot because it's fairly open and you can get used to the moving current in a kind of more controlled environment.
They still have like big rocks and stuff in there. So you're in like moving current. So you're like learning the drift and how to make good casts and all that stuff.
And you can see the trout feeding most of the time. And so you can kind of, now you're calculating how they're doing it, what pace they're doing it, all that kind of stuff that you need to think about when you're...
See a little bit of what they're hitting.
Yeah.
Take
yeah.
the, are there fish here out of the equation? Yes. Like, there are fish, it is on you to figure out what they're eating and how to, like, the depth and all that stuff. So it's a good place to just, like, be trying things and figuring stuff out.
You pick up any ancillary species when you're targeting trout? Like, are other species hitting what they're eating too?
Yes. And depending upon where... I don't know if you're speaking specifically about that river, but depending upon where, you know, out west, you can catch whitefish. Mm-hmm. There's grayling. And then, you know, here, the smallmouth will share a lot of the
same
waters.
That's kind of what I was wondering,
the
smallmouth were hitting that.
Yeah. And then,
did you catch any smallmouth?
Mm-hmm. Not there, no. Here in Louisville, though, where they stock Floyd's Fork, there's this special time of the year right now where the smallmouth and the trout are in the same areas, and it is my dream because, you know, you can – I love smallmouth. So, but, yeah.
You have more competition up here on Floyd's Fork than you do going down to the dam.
Yeah. When you go down
there –
it's
so accessible here.
There's a lot of people up at the top, like close to the hatchery where the sidewalks are. And then, you know, we saw – two other guys while we were there yesterday. I would say typically like a busy day, you may see five other people down on the lower stretches of the creek because you got to hike through some stuff to get down there. Access is good, but you know, it's not as busy as the top of the creek.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been out there with a bunch of different people and like a lot of times what they say, when I said like the first time I was out there is like, this doesn't look like Kentucky. Like the way it's set up, it does not look like you're in Kentucky. They've managed it to like, there's like a swampy portion and like there's all kinds of different, it's super well managed and very cool.
Well designed.
Like, yeah. Very well designed and like intended to like give you a cool experience fly fishing. Like we saw a mink running through. We see tons of ducks like right there. Deer are like
good duck territory.
It's ducky. It's very ducky. We saw deer like 15, 20 yards away just hanging out. Like they have no worries about people. They're just so
like 15, 20 yards away from the creek,
just on the other side of the water.
They're like right there looking. I'm going meh, and they're just like, look, go back to doing what they're doing, hanging. They have no fear at all.
There's shaking
beavers,
shaking the water and stuff off of them.
Yeah, I mean it's just a overall. Steven said, he's like, I'm having a hard time watching my indicator consistently because I'm just sitting here looking around at like all the different animals and all the different wildlife.
I heard a barred owl at one point.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody else.
I did hear that. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a really cool spot. So you know, it's 2.5 hours from us. It's a really
easy drive.
We saw an
eagle. We saw an eagle. Yeah. That was cool.
Bald eagle?
I don't know.
We have bald eagles here. I mean,
I know. Yeah. That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some other eagles maybe north, but it's probably a bald eagle. But yeah, so I love this place. We go a few times a year, I would say. It's a great place to take my son because it's, you know, that open area at the top where he can fish. So the fishing wasn't fantastic. Caught some stalker size, and then I actually caught two really nice sized trout. They weren't fat, so I don't think they've been porking up yet. You know, so a lot of times they'll fight their way up in the creek. They lose a bunch of mass, and then they sit there and feed. So one of them was on a woolly bugger down through the current, coming back up through the current, and it just... I think came from under it the way he went after it. That was pretty traditional fight, you know, little get him out of the current, get him to the side. It wasn't too bad. The next one I caught, I was on a small blood midge, and it was one of the more challenging fights that I've had with a trout because he kept diving down. I don't know if there was rock down there that he was trying to get to or what, but he kept diving down. couldn't get him out of the main current. And so, you know, I have maybe a foot of my fly line out of the tip of the rod. And so if you don't know what that means, like, you don't want your fly line to come back into the rod. And usually you have 30, 40 feet of line out. And so he's right close, but I cannot get him any closer to get him to the net. So it was fun. You know, it's anytime it's like that and my heart starts racing, I'm trying to fight this fish, get him out of the main current. He seemed to know what he was doing. And so Steven's like, I don't know, 50 yards away. And I gave a little, yeah, like just to get his attention. And then he, you know, walks over to help me with it. Because I didn't think I was going to be able to net the fish. I thought I was going to hand Steven the net and then get him to net it. But right as he got over there, I was able to get him out of the current and over to the side. And he was all scarred up, like he'd been fighting his way up through the rocks from the river. His colors were dark, great. And I'm saying him because I assume this to be a male. Usually females are bigger and fatter. But it was a good fish. I mean, if I had to guess, somewhere in like the 16-inch range, good handful size holding him. And so that was cool. Then we go back up to – did we go back up to the truck or did we just walk back up?
We did lunch and then went back.
So this fish is at 11:15 when I looked at the pictures.
Right before.
Didn't catch another fish the rest of the day. And so it was all morning action, which was surprising because as it warms up, usually it heats up.
We said the opposite in the truck. We were like, it's probably going to be an average morning and then a great afternoon just by the way the weather's looking and everything. Not how it played out.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. So we go back up, get lunch, go back down, fish the plunge pools. I think that was when Shane caught one, that one small one. And then we went back up to the top just to try to get some of the fish that are closer to the hatchery, a little easier to catch. Well, I'm fishing this part. So there's the section by the sidewalks, and then there's a clear drop where the fish cannot get from the main river, cannot get up there. It's like the start of the catch and release part where you cannot keep fish. There's really shallow water, really fast current, and I'm fishing that same white streamer again and bringing it up through some rocks out of the current, and it's kind of waving back and forth in the main current. And as it gets past this rock, I'm literally just dragging it almost like barely under the surface of the water, and I see this porpoise back come up out of the water. I'm not kidding. This fish's eyes were the size of a nickel. A nickel. So you figure that if his eyes are that big, this trout is, this got to be this big around. And it had shoulders and traps. like this was,
they've been doing
like
shrugs.
This thing was
like it scared like you.
So it had a sore neck at home. It was just getting buff.
I need to look at my heart rate on my watch because I'm sure it shot way up. So he comes up and just swipes at this thing, but it almost didn't look like he was trying to eat it. I was like, okay. Mad.
Huh? Just mad.
Yeah.
Just getting you out of there.
A few casts later, that's what I kind of settled on. So I throw that same streamer again. He does the same thing. And he doesn't come as out of the water this time, but I just see his head just swipe. Like he's just crossing the current. And then throw that a couple more times. He's not going after it. Switch flies come through. He goes after that one. I'm like, what in the world? Eat the thing. Like, dude, eat it. And so I tried probably 7 flies just trying to change it up. At that point, he stopped doing it. So I think he figured out, like, okay, this thing keeps coming to the same spot. Something's up. I think what he was doing was fighting for position in the creek, and he was trying to move anything. Like, he had a good spot with that rock, and he was trying to get anything out of the way. So then I tried nymphs, thinking that he was eating small stuff, just hanging out by that rock. No luck. I have been picturing in my mind for the last, 14 hours, this fish, where he's at, and seeing his eyeball come out of the water, and I want him.
I'm just imagining.
I'll be back.
I'm imagining, like, the next time we go to Hatchery and we all get out of the car and then we just, like, look and Jacob's speed walking to that rock.
See you guys down there. Well, so I told Braden and Tucker and Shane on the way out. It's like, it's a good thing I found that fish last, because if I had found it first.
You would have worked it the whole day.
I would have fished for 8 hours to that fish. It's just how I am. But, dude. that would be a fish of a lifetime. It was big, very big.
Sounds like a good trip.
Fun times. So go Wild members, go catch Jacob's fish.
I guess I kind of described it.
I don't know. You're like, where the sidewalk ends, there's a drop off, and then
you walk 50 paces.
If Jacob can't catch it,
that's a good point.
You're gonna have a hard time.
Yeah,
unless you really know what you're
doing.
That's
a good point.
But I think it's cool that you guys met up with a member. I always tell people, man. I mean, I share these stories, and I think people think it's because it's me and I'm seeing this stuff. I'm like, no. I mean, I meet people all the time that randomly met on Go Wild. I mean, Mike Larson's going hunting with, I think he's going turkey hunting this year and staying at a, he's going with a Go Wild member and staying at another Go Wild member's cabin. Like that kind of stuff is what we do, and you just can't get it anywhere else.
It's when I got the job at Go, did we just lose?
No, it's fine. We just keep going.
Before I actually started here, but I had gotten the job, I went fishing at Hatchery and met a guy who's now on the app, Tristan Moorhead. It's cool. It's a good talking point, and it'll be nice when you go up to people like, "Hey, you on Go Wild?" And people are like, "Yeah, of course I am." And you don't have to like pitch it every time, but it's cool to meet those people in the wild for sure.
Well, I got the like pity invite after the trip was already established. It was like, Brad, you want to go? And you guys probably assumed I wasn't going to go, and I didn't go. But I had a birthday dinner for my mom. We took her out to Tony's of Lexington, and I was told it was the best steakhouse in Lexington. It was very good, one of the best seared steaks I've ever had. But that was like, we were there real late, and I was like, I just didn't want to come back and then leave. And I totally forgot that I had Cub Scouts. Actually at Derek, who is a co-host on the show all the time. You guys know Derek well. So Derek hooked me up because I had this, Cub Scouts, you go through and you have all the achievements they have to do. And so we had to speak to someone that serves the community, either a veteran, police officer, fireman, something like that. And I was like, this would be cool at a fire station. I bet Derek could hook me up. So we did. And we scheduled it, and Derek works at a very nice station. It's one of the newest ones. I mean, it is a slick office.
He's got it easy, is what you're saying.
As facilities go, dude, I mean, they have like a commercial grade kitchen. Like, Derek doesn't ever talk about the kitchen that he's cooking in, and I just peeped in there, and I mean, it's nice. And we get there this weekend when Derek wasn't there, but we roll in, and I'm coming in with 8 Cub Scouts. And then a sibling and all these parents, and we get there, and these guys are all suiting up in a hurry. There's like the sirens are all going off. There's an alarm, or I think I heard an alarm. I don't know. There's sounds everywhere, and I walk out, and they're paying me no mind. They get in the truck and leave, and we are the only ones in the fire station. And I'm like, oh God, I planned this whole thing around having a demonstration. And so I had to drag out 5 minutes of material for 30 minutes with these scouts, and I'm just like hoping they're coming back. And then finally the truck comes back, and we got to see they did an awesome demonstration. I've never had a more detailed demonstration of the truck and the engine. They explained the difference to the kids. They got to go through and see every compartment on every truck, saw the jaws of life. Like, the kids loved it. It was great. Derek's team's awesome. But that was why I couldn't join. And I told you guys, even if I didn't have anything, I think I would pull a Dan and I would bank some equity towards turkey season, because that's like, it's just too close. I'm coming out of trade show season where I spend it all with the wife, like leaving her for weeks at a time in the first half of the year. And I know next month kicks off turkey season, and I've already got my first 2 weekends of turkey season are spoken for through various commitments that I've got. So the last turkey weekend is open, which is usually the worst around here. And I think it's going to be even more. I think by second weekend we'll be hitting those lulls that usually hit the last weekend, because it's warmed up so fast here. And so I'm trying to get aggressive on my evening and morning turkey hunts at midweek, which is going to interfere with school drop-offs and stuff. So I was like, I'm not burning that.
So what kicked off the invite? We had already playing the trip.
That's all right. I
mentioned wanting to start fly fishing.
Yeah.
To everybody listening out there that has ever thought, I want to try fly fishing, you don't have to go to a river, creek, stream. The best fly fishing, or the most enjoyable pound for pound, is a bluegill pond. I can help you cast. Like, we can do that anytime. And so this is open invitation. I will fish at the drop of a hat. You know that.
I know that.
And so if you get 2 hours Hit me up, man.
I have that rod and reel that I bought off of Mark. Is it decent?
Yeah, dude, it'll work.
Yeah, I didn't think it. I mean, he said it was like a beginner level. I paid like $50 for it off him, and I think he lost money on it. But
I used a plastic reel with a cheap rod for 2 years. I mean,
yeah,
I've just like this trip, I got to try my nice new setup, which was really cool. I got some tweaks to make, but. Yeah, I mean,
I've got like 12 flies and a $50 rod and reel setup.
If you bring that thing in here, let me cast it a little bit. Sometimes on the cheaper rods, they don't work as smoothly on casting the line, and so sometimes you can go up a size.
Mm.
That would be the only thing that.
Yeah, I wish you had been with us when we went down to Missouri.
You would like that.
Dude, it was so cool. Well, meeting Mark Van Patten, who is literally wrote the book on fly fishing. I mean, this huge legend in fly fishing. Got that. You weren't with us either, were you? This was right before Braden started. I forgot Braden wasn't there. but Mark, we did the retreat there, and one day we went out, and Mark taught basically the whole team. Jacob, I think at that time, was the only one that was familiar with fly fishing. And so we got, you know, he spent time with teaching us how to cast. And then we did a little, we didn't really get to fish much. We were kind of just learning to cast, roll cast, and that kind of stuff. And I haven't touched it since. I haven't, you know, I've fished. Yeah, I know it is a shame. But I just haven't fly fished since then. If I'm usually out, I'm usually using, you know, my gear that I'm more familiar with. And I think I still have that intimidation factor going, I need to go out with Jacob.
Well, when we do the dicks, it's good fly fishing.
What?
Gosh, clip that.
D-I-X.
No.
It's a kayak, out and back kayak trip off the Kentucky River. And we're doing it this spring because it's my favorite out and back. And it used to only have access from like a voluntary public access. It was like a guy with a trailer that had a boat ramp. And I think he like went to jail or something. So it was shut last season. And then I think the state of Kentucky just bought it and opened the ramp back up. So
I always wonder if you just make up stuff that you don't know for sure. Like that sounded entirely made up.
If you met this guy and saw his trailer, it would be the most logical. It would be the most
but
logical.
Just admit, thing. You filled in some gaps there, didn't you?
I'm assuming he went to.
Did he suffer death by
it makes for a fun story.
Yeah. I went down there with my boat, and it was like caution tape around it. The trailer was totally gone. It was like trespassers will be prosecuted sort of thing. I'm like, something happened here.
So that river that he's talking about is one of Chris Poor's most hyped.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that says a lot to me. Nobody knows
there we go.
Dude,
I say it. It's
no,
like, whatever.
No,
oh,
Jacob,
someone else says it.
Jacob knows. Chris Poor is a mentor of mine. He was actually on Restless Native, RIP that feed. Sorry, guys.
Not Chris, the show.
No. So
RIP the feed.
Chris Poor was a mentor to me in college for journalism, but also this just really experienced angler. He had a fishing magazine for a while that he ran,
he
right?
Did.
Like,
yep.
The dude's very legit. And now he works in advertising. He's got all these boat clients. I mean, he's just very experienced, savvy angler. And
it's my favorite by far.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. There's no development on either side, so you're just going through these canyons and there's no houses or anything. And then you hit these rapids that any sort of John boat or motorized boat can't get up past it. And so you can kayak, you get out of your kayak and you kind of pull it up through the rocks and get back in. And then that whole next mile leading up to I forget the name of that dam. Was it called?
Lake Harrington?
The Harrington Lake Dam. There's a dam, so out of the bottom of the water is cold water, so trout can live there year-round, even in the summer. They stock it. They just walk up to the dam and dump the fish over the dam, but trout can live there year-round because the water stays cold enough. So you get trout fishing, you get smallmouth and largemouth in the river, and then I've never caught anything on the Kentucky, but, you know, I'll go out there with my depth finder, and it's like, you know, 40, 50, 60 feet,
deep.
So you know that there's some monsters down in there.
Actually, right there where the Dix River comes into the Kentucky River, there's a cliff rock wall. Is great fishing just because of that current coming in.
Yeah, there's a high bridge, train bridge you go under, and you just know those pylons are going to be stocked with monsters of some sort. I always get nervous because a lot of times I go by myself and I just envision myself getting capsized by some huge fish that I didn't that I made a mistake hooking up to.
Well, but again, we're talking about half day long trip. We got to get you out on some of these.
Yeah,
backyards.
That's probably
again,
more.
Right now was just you're competing with turkey season, and I'm not doing it. But
yeah. Once you get the shower done, happy wife. Happy
I just
life.
Need to kill a bird first time out, and then I could make room for some other things. Yeah. All right. Well, this was a fun show. Thanks again to Wildland Coffee for keeping us caffeinated. Thanks to you all for listening. If you're not logging these shows on Go Wild, you're missing out because we are giving away some crazy stuff on rewards. If you haven't noticed on your Go Wild account, we've hit a lot of new rewards that are coming in. There, just recently we introduced a Badlands Bino case that was a smoking deal. We're flying through those. There was a turkey kill kit that came with a turkey target and a sticker sheet. It was like $5. I mean, these are killer rewards. And you get this stuff by just building points. And one of the easiest way to build points is logging these shows you're listening to. So go to Go Wild. If you don't have Go Wild, it's download gowild.com or look up Go Wild in the App Store. You hit the plus sign, log time, outdoor podcast. You'll find Uncensored here. And you can pick which filthy show you decided to listen to today. Tag us. We have Braden Ware, Dan Hood, Jacob Knight, and Brad Luttrell. Thanks again to Dan Johnson for having us on the Sportsman's Empire. All right, we're out. Thanks, guys.